is the weekend, and that means new movies are out, which means only one thing. Welcome to John Serba Hates Your Favorite Movie.
I'm very excited about this. It's going to be fun. Or should I not be excited about it?
I would love it if you would be excited about it. At least you'd be excited about something. So. And now, John Serba Hates Your Favorite Movie.
Hi, I'm John Serba, and I hate your favorite movie. I'm here, as always, with intrepid producer and my co-host, Eric Hulkren.
Thank you, John Serba.
Are you not intrepid?
I am intrepid. I'm hoping that you will do this entire podcast using extraneous language a la Dan Brown, because we will spend...
The renowned Dan Brown.
World-renowned Dan Brown, because it rhymes, and that's how you have to refer to him. I want to say congratulations to you. The podcast is officially drinking age. This is episode 21.
Excellent. Cheers.
In this episode, you will need a lot of alcohol to make it through some of the stuff that we're going to talk about. Promise
yeah,
you.
Yeah, it's like this will be. I mean, if we could actually like record more regularly, like we were for a while. I'm not judging anybody. We're busy men. We are busy men. Is there booze in that coffee?
Of course there is, yes.
All right.
It's the only way I'm going to get to be able to talk about any of these movies today.
Well, you know, and a couple of them aren't too bad.
But is this a rare episode where you're going to hate two movies at the same time?
I may get to three.
Wow.
Terrible. Just terrible.
All right. I had the pleasure of seeing one of them with you.
So hold on to your hats.
Whew.
We've already hinted at one.
Yes.
You already know what it is. But I'm going to lead off with Jack Reacher: Never Go Back. And did you see the first Jack Reacher film?
You know, you can say what you want about Tom Cruise, but like if when somebody puts Tom Cruise in, or Tom Cruise puts himself in the third person into a role that he gets to just be Tom Cruise, he's super enjoyable. I loved the first one.
Yeah, so did I. You know, I think, and maybe I made reference to this in a previous episode. Where like Cruise, you know, when he tries to do the depth thing, it's just really hard. You know, Brad Pitt is better at being the movie star who can lose himself in a character. You know, and that really isn't Cruise's strong point. His strong point is being that larger than life guy with the smirk on his face.
Yeah.
You know, delivering a good line. You know what I mean? He is not as convincing being the one-handed, one-eyed Nazi.
Right. Yes.
With a conscience. You know. So I like the fact that he has embraced. You know, he's the driving force behind the Jack Reacher films and the Mission Impossible films. Because I think he understands now that he might understand his own limitations. And I have such respect for someone who can do that. And this is all conjecture on my part. But you don't see Cruise chasing, you know, the big biopics, the Oscar bait type role.
Yes, right.
Because I think let's be realistic. He'd be okay in those roles. There are better people to take those roles. And in fact, who knows? Maybe it's gotten to a point where he's like, no one wants me for these roles. So I'm going to do what fits my skill set, and that is running. You know, punching,
that is
running,
funny.
Shooting.
Yes. Yep.
Driving motorcycles, doing my own stunts. That's, you know, there's a lot to be said for physical performance in movies, and I think that gets overlooked so much. Like, one of my all-time favorite physical performances in movies, Uma Thurman in the Kill Bill movies.
Yes.
You know?
Yep.
Or Alison Lohman and Drag Me to Hell. You know, these women went through the ringer for these roles that aren't like these huge, you know, literary depth type characters. But there's a level of conviction to what they do because they're so committed to getting the scene right. You know what I mean?
Right, yeah.
That
yeah.
They will submerge themselves in mud or whatever.
Sure, yeah.
Whatever it takes.
Or worse, right?
Yeah, or worse. So Jack Reacher, Never Go Back. There's an element to this movie where you can see that Cruise really didn't want to do the exact same thing. And I respect that. And that's why I was kinder to this movie than I maybe should have been. The first Jack Reacher, Christopher McQuarrie directed it, and he had a great kind of old school approach to car chases and action sequences. It had Werner Herzog, of course, he's not even my hero, he's my deity.
Yeah, he's your spirit animal, for sure.
Yeah, for sure. As the villain, and he just like, you know, he has this great screen presence. Those are two things that the new movie is lacking. It's directed by Edward Zwick, who is more of a boilerplate director. He's done Blood Diamond with DiCaprio, and The Last Samurai was the other Tom Cruise movie. So directing like a real hardcore action film isn't necessarily his forte, you know. But he does a reasonable job here, and there are times where you're just like, man, that sequence could have been way better if he had made a few different decisions. But the take on the Reacher character this time is there's a question of his paternity. He may have a 15-year-old daughter. And as a character in the first film, he was just this guy who was like the queen of Katwe. He could see eight moves ahead of everybody else, you know? And in this instance, it's like something has engaged his emotions, and therefore he's off his game, and he gets nabbed. You know, his intention is to clear the name of a friend of his who's a military officer played by Colby Smulders, who we know from the Avengers and How I Met Your Mother. She's getting railroaded on an espionage charge. She's innocent, and so he's trying to get her name cleared, and he finds out about this like potential paternity suit, and like he pauses, and next thing you know, he's being walked into prison, which is very un-Reacher like, you know. Of course they escape. The plot inevitably involves his maybe 15-year-old daughter, who of course kind of, you know, isn't a character of her own more than she's like sort of a plot construct to try to open that door and reach her, and to just be kidnapped by the bad guys.
Right.
So he's got, you know, so he can't just shoot him.
Sure. Yes.
You know, it's that kind of thing where there's a lot of real kind of basic action movie elements to this film that they're okay. It's an entirely watchable movie. If you went in with any kind of higher expectation, you'd probably be disappointed by it. I will say at least that Danica Yarrow, who plays a 15-year-old girl, and Colby Smulders, they both neither one is necessarily just that like one-dimensional female character. I mean, Colby Smulders is you know, she can almost keep up with Jack Reacher in a fist fight. You know what I mean?
Sure. Yeah.
You know, and there's a point where I like this scene where the three of them are holed up in a hotel in New Orleans, and he's like, "You stay here with the girl. I'm going to go out." And she's like, "Why? Because I'm the woman." And there's this kind of challenging of his sort of macho attitude. Does she stay? Yeah, she does, because this is a Jack Reacher movie. This isn't Kobe Smulders' movie. You know, she's not the one who's going to go out and get in a scrape and somehow pummel the crap out of five thugs
at the same time.
So it has its moments. It really does. You know, and part of it, I think, is what Cruise is trying to do is to give a little more dimension to the Reacher character, which isn't to say he's trying to make this character some kind of grand metaphor or anything else. He's just trying to give him a little more to his personality. I think part of the allure of the character is, who is this guy? He's just this wanderer. All he has in his pocket is a toothbrush and $38 and an ID, you know. so he wants to give him this sort of idea that maybe he could have lived his life a little differently. You know, there's this potential that maybe he has missed 15 years of his offspring's life.
Sure.
So there's a little bit of that kind of thing going on. And you also get the sense, and how old is Cruz? Mid-50s now?
Probably.
You get the sense of a weariness in the character that he never verbalizes, you know. And this is kind of where the subtle physical performance comes in. Jack Reacher, sure, opening scene in the movie, you know, he's sitting at a diner bar, and there's five guys laid out on the ground squirming because he's just kicked their asses, right?
54.
54, yeah. And he's sitting there, and he looks like, yeah, I'm tough, but man. You know, and he goes back to his scuzzy motel room, and he gets into bed real gingerly, and the next morning he's kind of, and it's like, okay, there's a weariness to this
sure.
guy,
yeah.
where, you know, your typical kind of action hero isn't going to show any kind of vulnerability on the screen.
No, he would have been out for 36 straight hours, and yeah. like he would have made cupcakes for the other superheroes.
Yeah, yeah,
and,
yeah. exactly. Wouldn't even have a bruise on
right.
him, you know. And it, I think it's telling that Cruz walks through this entire movie with a gash on his, you know, on his face.
Not to foreshadow, but that AD should have worked on Inferno, so they would have kept the forehead the entire movie. That would have been
sure,
great.
Sure, exactly. There's a little continuity problem.
Just
there.
A couple.
So, I mean, real reservations with recommending Jack Reacher too heavily. You know, it's one of those where it's like, would I ever tell people not to go to the movie theater? No. Would you be wiser to kind of wait to watch it at home? Maybe.
Well, and kinda, especially kinda. Right now, right, where you're on the precipice of all of the fourth
sure,
quarter
sure.
insanity to happen,
yeah.
right? Like,
yeah.
you're going to have your pick of things to watch in literally
a
70,
week.
72 hours, right? Like, yeah. So,
yeah. So save that $10 for, you know, Doctor Strange or Arrival or Trolls.
Star Wars or Trolls.
Trolls.
I'm going to go see Trolls on Saturday, so I'll have...
I'll be there, too.
Oh, will you?
They're
going to make you suffer through a kid sneak on a Saturday?
Can we sit next to each other?
Of course we can.
Okay. So we can giggle.
Have you had to do one of these before?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, boy.
Oh, yeah. I've been to a million Saturday mornings.
Oh, boy. They're the worst.
Kid sneaks.
They're
yeah,
literally the
I
worst.
I'm sorry you'll be there.
Oh, the worst.
Moving on. I want to quickly recommend... a movie that was made right here in our city, Grand Rapids, Michigan. It's called The Alchemist Cookbook. Are you familiar with Joel Patroikis? He's an indie filmmaker. He's from Grand Rapids. He's made two movies before that got great acclaim on the film festival circuits, called Ape and Buzzard.
I have not seen either one.
Very
of those.
Transgressive, kind of lo-fi. Indie films, and The Alchemist Cookbook is his newest one, and I don't know if it's a little different from the other two. The other two were these kind of weirdo loners characters in an urban setting, and in this one, the main character is secluded out in the woods. And it never really comes out and says it, but he has definitely got some kind of mental illness happening. You know, he's taking pills. And the way it manifests itself, he is apparently trying to summon the demon Belial, who we know from The Exorcist. You know,
yes, we do.
You know,
well, that was when he was much younger and...
Well, yeah, yeah. He was
just trying to make his way in the world. And
well, and he's found new ways to manifest himself on this plane.
Right.
as any artist would.
Clearly, yeah. I mean, you evolve as an artist to figure out new and exciting ways to tell your story.
Exactly.
To hone your craft, if
exactly.
you will.
Exactly. You know. So this character, he's played by Ty Hickson, is trying to... he has dreams. I believe he's... You know, the movie never really spells it out, and I get the feeling that if you watch it two or three times, its secrets will sort of manifest in the details of the film. Although Patrykis' style as a writer and director looks kind of freeform, like, hey, I'm going to turn the camera on and we're just going to let it roll for a long time and,
right.
And watch this guy eat, you know, like a complete slob. It's happened in every, all of his movies so far. It's like a trademark of his. And in fact, the last film, Buzzard, has a classic moment in it where a guy is eating bugles at the end of a treadmill, and the other guy is dropping the bugles, and he's kind of like this Pac-Man head. It's great. You need to watch it. So these are obviously very idiosyncratic movies. So anyway, the guy has a dream of like summoning Belial, he's practicing some kind of occult alchemy. And I think he wants to, make gold so he can be rich and live in a giant house with his cat. And there's this great scene where I hesitate to call it a soliloquy because he's talking to his cat. So he's not talking to nobody.
Sure.
And he talks about how he dreams of having just a room full of Little Debbie snack cakes just piled to the ceiling, you know. this great isolationist fantasy of his.
I could probably get behind that fantasy, actually. Just Little Debbie everywhere.
I'd have no problem with that. I'd have no problem with that either. I can understand the draw to the idea. There are two actors in this entire movie. The other guy is Amari Cheatham. He plays this guy's buddy who kind of drives out there every once in a while and, like, here's your groceries, here's your prescription, and gives the character another person to talk to for you to realize that this guy, besides, isolating himself, is a bit socially maladroit. And the other guy is, like, this sort of goofball type who's like, come on, man, let's watch a movie. And he pulls out a VHS of Red Heat, and he's like, I don't have a TV, you know, it's that kind of thing. So great little idiosyncratic movie, I think. And I want to watch it again. I really do. It's playing in some theaters. Illustrative of Joel Patroikis, kind of aesthetic and philosophy. He released the film on BitTorrent, so you can go out and download it.
Nice.
and it's one of those pay what you want kind of things. If you want to get it for free or throw him a buck, you can. You know, you want to throw him 20, that would be really cool too. You know, he's got this kind of punk rock aesthetic that's very admirable. Watch The Alchemist Cookbook. It's free. It's free. Free. How can you not? Moving on to we're gonna get deep into the suck now, people.
Are you ready?
Not yet.
Okay.
Well, actually, let's do it. Let's just do
you
it.
Sure.
Yeah.
Okay.
We'll do it again, and we might do it again.
Wow.
Yeah.
And now, John Serba hates your first of perhaps three movies in the next 20 minutes.
Yeah. If Keeping Up with the Joneses is your favorite movie, I hate your favorite movie. Now, the premise is garbage. The cast, the names behind it, there's hope here. That's kind of why I kind of plucked this out of the muck and said, I'm going to go see this movie.
It wasn't because of Gal Gadot, because that's why I would go see the movie.
Well, you know, Zach Galifianakis, Isla Fisher, John Hamm, Gal Gadot, Greg Mottola directed it. He's the guy who directed Adventureland and Superbad.
Sure.
Superbad, funny. Adventureland, great movie.
Yeah.
I loved
it's
Adventureland.
It's a great movie, yeah.
That's a really, really terrific film.
And those of us who know you, that one's like right in your lane. Like the John Serba lane, that's right in the John Serba lane.
Yeah, it kind of is, you know. And it's kind of sad. It's kind of funny. It's just like...
Well, like everybody wants some. Like that...
Oh, yeah.
You know, that's your lane, you know.
Yeah, for sure. It's like... That's like smart nostalgia. Have you been watching South Park? lately?
No, I have not.
There's this whole thing about member berries. Everybody's high on member berries. Remember the Ewok village? Wasn't that great? Remember? Remember Toto? And it's like digging at Stranger Things and Star Wars nostalgia and all that. But so it's like smart nostalgia. That's
sure.
Adventureland. And so anyway, Keeping Up with the Joneses. This is like, do we need another spy spoof? How many spy spoofs
is
can we
Is it worse
live
than the Ashton
through?
Kutcher one?
What's-her-face
from Grey's Anatomy?
With Katherine Heigl?
There you go. Yeah, is it worse than that one?
Heigl?
Yes.
I don't think I think I'm...
Because that one's bad.
I think I may have scheduled my vacation.
You should continue to schedule your vacation anytime that one comes up, because it's bad.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure I scheduled my vacation to...
The movie starts with Ashton Kutcher riding up in an elevator with Katherine Heigl, and that's how they kick off their romantic tryst before it becomes a spy spoof, if that will tell you anything.
I kind of want to see it now. As someone who... I kind of want to be an aficionado of bad movies.
I can only recommend it if you want to compare it against the source material of Gal Gadot and John Hamm.
I kind of like watching, hate watching Katherine Heigl films. So what we have here with Keeping Up with the Joneses is a spy spoof crossed with the parody of boring Caucasian suburban life, which is,
you know, this is like my fantasy is to sit in pitch meetings and hear that sentence be said out loud. Like, that's what I want. Like, on my deathbed, I want somebody to roll me into a room for 8 hours as somebody comes and goes, "All right, guys, so what we're gonna do today is a spy spoof that crosses with, you know, just a commentary on suburban life and how banal it could be from day to day until your neighbors turn out to be John Hamm and Gal Gadot." Who's with me? Mad Men, Wonder Woman? Who wants it?
Yeah, exactly. Wait till we get part two in the hate here, because there's a great
I thought you were scaring me that they were going to make a sequel to continuing to Keep Up with the Joneses.
Wait till the pitch for the next one comes. Anyway, so you got Zach Galifianakis and Isla Fisher. They are the like boring suburban parents. They live on a perfect cul-de-sac with the manicured lawns, and they drop their kids off at the bus. They're going to camp for a couple weeks, and they go back and they're like, "We can have sex." And then they envision having sex and knocking over the candles and the house burning down, and then so they don't have sex. They just sit on the couch and watch The Good Wife. What a fresh approach to these type of characters. So they're bored and whatever, and Jeff is the name of the Zach Galifianakis character.
Of course it is.
He's just a dork with a bad haircut, and he's into homebrew, and he has his homebrew belly. You know, and he works in human resources at an aerospace technology place. So,
dun, dun, dun.
Dun, dun, dun.
Foreshadowing.
So, you know, across the cul-de-sac, who moves in? But, you know, Wonder Woman and a madman, and they are just like, you know, so you have like the guy with the beer belly, and his wife is kind of mousy, you know. And then across the way, you've got like legs and chin
right
move in, yes. You know, and so they kind of hit it off, and
which might have been a better title, by the way.
Legs and chin, but you know, and they are Mr. and Mrs. Not Smith, and
is it really Not Smith?
No, oh, they're okay. Mr. and Mrs. Jones.
Got
so. So don't mistake them for Mr. and Mrs. Smith.
Don't
which,
judge
what,
me
was
for, not ge- for not guessing well, off the bat which one of them was the Joneses. Calm down.
So all right. So, but you know,
I saved that 2 hours of my life to do something more productive. So
oh, yeah, for sure. Did you see Mr. and Mrs. Smith?
Yeah.
Spy spoof. Spy spoof. Spy spoof.
Is it better or worse than that one?
Well, that movie was a mess. I don't know. It, rotten apples to rotten oranges, if you ask
Which
me.
Which one would you rather eat?
I'd rather not eat. Fair. I would rather starve. All right, to death.
Fair enough.
So, it's really so. The movie unfolds predictably. You know, why would the guy work at an aerospace place if there wasn't something going on and the spies are trying to, you know, there's spy shit going on. That is the movie.
So let me ask, because I have not seen this movie. Does the movie end with the children getting off the bus and coming to a destroyed house or a perfect house? Which one of those?
A house does blow up. That's where the
really
the
movie, I didn't see it coming.
The movie, you know, that's the movie begins and the house blows up and then it flashes back. So it will catch up to the house blowing up. That is not a spoiler. A house blows up. I won't say whose. It could just be like a random house. It could be someone else's house. It couldn't
could
be the Jones' house. It could be the boring.
If it wasn't
house.
One of those coloring books you bought at Meijer to keep you busy with adult coloring books for spy movies.
So I saw this at a public screening. It wasn't like a private critic screening. It was a public screening. There are other people there, and like, you know, early on, you know, a joke was delivered, and you know that there's a desperation involved because they deliver the joke and there's like dead air on the screen so the people in the theater can laugh.
To let you know that there's a joke.
And during that time, I just like, I heard the air conditioner whirring. You know?
Right.
Somewhere in the distance, a shot rang out. It was the movie shooting itself in the foot. If Keeping Up with the Joneses is your favorite movie, I hate your favorite movie. Okay. And now,
John Serba hates another one of your favorite movies. And since I don't know where he's going right now, I don't know which joke to put here. So I'll just give it back to you.
If The Accountant is your favorite movie, I hate your favorite movie. Now this.
See, you should have let me know because I would have said, and John Serba makes fun of autistic Batman.
Okay, so as far as movies about amoral autistic math genius weapons specialist assassins go.
If you've ever woken up in a cold sweat wishing that John Nash could fire a sniper rifle, this is your movie.
If you thought A Beautiful Mind just wasn't violent enough, The Accountant is for you.
If The Beautiful Mind needed a prepper seller, then this is all you, guys.
So, basically, Ben Affleck's character, his name is Christian Wolfe with two Fs. And he's got a front, you know, in the Chicago suburbs doing taxes for yokels, you know.
Right.
Ma and Pa from the farm come to him and they're like, I don't know if we got to pay our taxes this year, Mr. Wolf. And Mr.
We
Wolf
came
sits
all the
there,
way up from like, Peoria, Illinois to see you. There ain't no accountants.
And he goes, you sell your knitting online, don't you? I mean, he's just very cold, you know, he's a socially kind of chilly guy. Yeah. Do you have a room in the hut? You know, and it's like, oh, he's helping these poor, these Ma and Pa. He's helping Ma and Pa Kent. And so as they're walking out, he's like, do you like to fish, son? No, but I like to shoot. So there's a scene later where he's just like hanging out on their property, target practicing with like a military grade sniper rifle, and they just don't understand. Wow, this kid can shoot a gun.
Okay, so
some of the stupidest stuff ever.
Because like, and we're gonna get to a movie that I'm gonna tell you, regardless of what it was, way dumber. But like, who writes down a scene where who on earth invites their accountant to anything? Like, who is like, my accountant? I love him. I would love to take him fishing. Nobody takes their accountant anywhere. They see him once a year and never talk to them again.
But these are kind. They're kind folk.
They're kind folk from Peoria. Kind folk.
They kind of sense maybe the guy's lonely, you know, and he might like a slice of pie, a homemade meal. Anyway,
when he's done with the chicken pot pie and the sniper rifle, what happens?
Well, he is actually, you know, he's a contract like guy. So organized criminals hire him to like
to cook the books, right?
Uncook books figure out who's ripping them off,
and
then double duty. You know, he can not only figure out who's ripping them off, he can kill that guy because he's a dead shot with a sniper.
This is a great business model.
I know.
Like two for one.
So,
not the least of which, I didn't even know that uncooking books was a thing that people did, unless you were in law enforcement.
Well, I mean, I guess if you're a man. So, the plot ends up, for some reason, he ends up working for a company run by John Lithgow, and they hire him to kind of figure out what's going on. There is such needless plot convolution in this that, like, I'm getting tangled in my own head trying to explain this movie in a clear and concise way. So, but anyway, Lithgow hires him to kind of figure out what's going on. It's like, wait, I thought only crooks hired him, but this legit company actually hired him. So what? Okay, whatever. Just go with it. Because we have to get to the scene where he's in a boardroom with glass walls so he can so light piano music can play as he takes a dry erase marker and he just does math. He just does math like crazy. He's just doing math all night. And Anna Kendrick is the accountant who works for the company, and she comes in the next morning like, "You figured all this out in 15 hours? Oh my gosh, you know?"
And then does she play cups then while he's doing...
She's so miscast. She's obviously dropped in this movie because she's got a light presence, which isn't to say she can't, you know, inhabit a character.
Sure,
up in the air.
Yeah.
Great character for her. Oscar nominated even. And I do think she is greater than Pitch Perfect allows, you know. That's what everybody knows her for. She's a really terrific comedic actress. And I think they just kind of cast her like, okay, we need a light and airy presence in this grim, dark movie. So let's just throw her in there and she can smile and maybe see into Wolf with two F's's soul.
F's's.
You know, this is a really terrible movie. It's very slick, but like, I never bought Affleck inhabiting this character. And there are flashbacks to when he was a kid, you know, and his dad is this military honcho, and he's, you know, and they're talking to a specialist who wants to help the autistic kid, and he's like, "I ain't gonna raise no pansy, and you're not gonna baby this kid." So, you know, the dad takes Wolf and his other brother, and they like, he trains them to be tough guys. You know, like there's a scene where they're in, I don't know, indiscriminate Far Eastern country,
right?
With martial arts guru who's just beating the crap out of these teenage boys, and the dad goes, "You're not done yet," you know, even though they're on the ground and all bruised up and all this. So that's how he came to be,
huh?
It's how he came to be, and it's just in a bunch of implausibilities crammed into like one person. And another issue I had with it is that like this is not at all, it's exploitationist on one level, because the character's autism is a plot point. You know, he has that part of him that has a hard time empathizing with other people, so he's going to be a killer, you know? And it's this plot point that it just exploits for, you know, our entertainment via violence. There's a lot of this movie that I really kind of loathed. I mean, it's absurd, but you know, it's kind of trying to be a lot smarter than it is. If it's a psychological thriller, the implication of that phrase is that it actually has a brain. It has no brain. This is a dumb movie. If The Accountant is your favorite movie, I hate your favorite movie.
And now, part three in a trilogy of movies that are totally awful. If you've ever thought to yourself, I need to own a Faraday pointer, John Serba is about to hate your favorite movie and perhaps tell you what in the Sam Hell a Faraday pointer is.
I still don't think I know.
Why does it need to be in a...
You seem to know what a Faraday pointer is.
Well, no, I know what a Faraday cage is, right? Because it blocks... You put a cell phone in it, it blocks the ability for the cell phone to get out and tracking to get in, essentially, right?
Are you saying that, like...
It blocks electromagnetic... But my problem with the explanation of what this thing is, and it's partly because I'm an idiot, and I have the rudiments of how a Faraday cage is constructed, and I've never heard it constructed of human bone, so I don't know why this would be called a Faraday pointer. I don't...
Because Dan Brown thought it was a cool word.
Together, right? Like, the only thing this movie missed is that the Faraday pointer had to merge with the Faraday presenter to give a keynote at the end about Dante and his inferno.
Well, you do know that Dan Brown made up the word symbologist, too. That never existed until the Da Vinci Code. So anyway, if Inferno is your favorite movie, I hate your favorite movie.
Dear God, seriously. And
listener, Eric and I sat through this movie.
Through this movie. Suffered. I walked out of it, and I've been on the show like I said earlier, 21 episodes of this. I can honestly say I don't know that I've been more befuddled by the multitude of terrible choices in 2 hours. Like, I've seen bad movies this year working, you know, for the job that we do, but. I haven't seen one that, like, I'm consistently shaking my head and I'm looking over at my friend who I came with who's laughing out loud. And, you know, I won't spoil anything, but I will just say in the first 5 minutes, he apparently has amnesia, can't remember the word for coffee, but remembers his Gmail password all within 12 seconds.
But, you know, I don't understand the science of amnesia. I'm not, like, knowledgeable on it, but, like, you know... Short-term memory loss involves remembering things that happened 10 years ago, but not what happened 2 days ago.
Sure.
I am willing to explain that away. The rest of the movie, I can't. You know, that's...
I would agree with you if the movie spent any time talking about the nuance of anything, right? Like, from what in the actual hell a Faraday pointer is, all the way up to... Because, I mean... If only he was in a room with a nurse that could maybe explain that about how his short-term and long-term memory would work so that I would go, oh, that's how he knows his Gmail password and can't remember the word for coffee.
What's two more lines of exposition in a movie?
In this one, it's nothing because the movie is literally monologue after soliloquy after monologue. They're including some that you were making fun of where the guy can't even do his lines, so he mumbles.
I'm making fun of it. I'm sure there's a real word in the script, although I don't want to assume. You know,
if there was, he didn't say it.
I'm just going to decontextualize it. We gave you a shot of Benzahivis.
Right.
Which, I'm not going to contextualize it because that's like part of... Something that happens late, deep in the movie, which is complete and utter garbage. Like, there are twists in this movie where you just go, I can't. Is this really happening? Did someone thought this would make... This is a good story to tell.
Well, and, you know, I came home last night and I told my wife, Angie, like, I genuinely... Like, I don't put them on a list or ever watch them again. But I had a good time in American Treasure 1. I had a good time in the first one of these. I thought it was plausible enough that I put, like, I was like, okay. Because puzzle movies, I think, neither one of these are anywhere near Usual Suspects puzzle
movie, right?
But puzzle movies I really enjoy as they unravel and they take swerves. And, but, like, guys, you see the swerves in the first 3 minutes. You've got the entire thing figured out. And then they just fill the next 2 hours with just drivel. Like,
so the dig, you know, this is the third of the Dan Brown, Robert Langdon, comma, symbologist. They kind of... the franchise is old enough at this point where... I think marketing-wise, they're just going to confuse everybody. Like, what is Inferno? What is this movie? Why isn't it The Da Vinci Code, colon?
Right.
Inferno.
Which was my first thought, because it actually wasn't until I saw the poster, and you go, and it says it in the byline of the poster that it's Da Vinci Code and Angels and Demons, that you're like, oh, okay, Robert's back, everybody.
You know I'm joking,
yes,
about this, because people are too stupid to figure out that a movie called Inferno is related to the one called Angels and Demons and the one called The Da Vinci Code.
Yes, they are.
So it should be The Da Vinci Code series, colon, part 3, dash, Inferno.
The symbologist. I think it really should be called The Symbology Series.
Yeah.
Colon, Inferno, as made popular by Da Vinci Code and Angels and Demons _ photos / HTML.
There will be a time where movie titles are just URLs.
Yes.
HTTPS / colon.
They're just snapcode filters is what they'll be. And God, I wish this was just a snapcode. I can't even, like, it is so nonsensical from the jump off. And then even when they wrap it up at the end, and, you know, we're decontextualizing this because it's not even out yet, but it's so terrible that we wanted to make sure that you knew that to not, like, literally do anything this weekend for 2 hours. Anything. Absolutely
besides
anything besides go see this movie.
So the basic conceit is the renowned Dan Brown's heroic character, Robert Langdon, comma, symbologist, wakes up in a hospital bed with memory loss, you know, and blood on his shirt and you know, a head wound.
Yes, and at some point in the movie, he had visited a doctor who implanted adamantium and a self-healing mutant gene, because that cut on his forehead comes and goes for 2 solid hours.
Well, his hair covers it, Eric.
Sure it
Come
does.
On.
Like, there's, like, all these weird shots where, like, you clearly would see...
You're turning me into an apologist here. Stop picking the scene.
It's, like, the plot point of the whole movie is the cut on his head that comes and goes for 2 solid hours. It takes place over 2 days, it seems to me. And, like, I don't do this, like, I'm obviously not an assistant director for a living, but it seems like if it takes place over 2 or 3 days, your only job is to make sure that the cut on his head stays on his head.
Yeah, I know. I know. They should just, like, put a digital box over it so you're looking at it at all times.
Yes.
And that way they won't lose track of it, and neither will we. Anyway, he wakes up in a hospital bed. And we're subject to, like, 15 minutes of his insane hallucinations.
Which is awful.
Where director Ron Howard just thinks he's being an artist, you know? It's just, he's like, you know, he's having hallucinations that come to find out when he gets the
Faraday pointer.
The Cadbury egg pointer. No, Faraday.
I wish it was a Cadbury egg. That would make this movie much more enjoyable.
That he's been hallucinating things from the Botticelli painting. Painting that you know, that illustrated.
Well, I mean, John, to be historically correct, Dante invented the idea of hell. Botticelli brought it to life for people
to visualize it. Thank you. Yeah. Okay. Thank you.
Thanks for
reading the script to us.
We're just gonna go all Dan Brown about it.
the renowned painter.
Yes.
Botticelli.
Yes.
And so, you know, so he's having these hallucinations, and it's like, what do these things mean? Well, you know, it's tied in, then they turn, and there's stuff hidden, of course. And it's a great big plot. You know, Ben Foster plays a guy who, like, foams at the mouth, because Ben Foster doesn't play characters who don't foam at the mouth a little bit. who's a billionaire, and he keeps preaching that overpopulation is killing humanity, and perhaps there's a plot involved here. And then Felicity Jones plays the doctor who happens to be treating Langdon, but is also a fan of his, because when she was 9 years old, she went to one of his lectures.
Right.
And her name is Dr. Fetus, PhD, because she's like 19.
Right. Yes.
But then it explains it later, because, you know, after this Terminatrix woman shows up and she's running down the hall.
Yes.
Yep. Whoosh, whoosh, with the non-Mulder X-Files guy, grim look on his face as she charges down the hall, and she's shooting, and they run away right in the middle of all of his hallucinations, and they end up at her apartment, and he sees that, oh, she's a prodigy, because she's such an egotist, she's got framed newspaper articles
right.
hanging out there. So
she's got a shrine to herself.
She has a shrine to herself, so they don't have to put that in the dialogue too. And so it starts, I'm at the point where the conspiracy theory is just like bottom of the barrel garbage, quasi intellectual trash.
All that being said, I actually, the one thing I sort of liked about this was the Ben Foster character seemed the most, of the insanity, seemed like the most believable insanity. Like, if you were a billionaire and had all this free time on your hand, I could see you going on a speaker series about the end of the world because you have $1 billion. You'll probably be fine.
Yeah, you know, and he has theories about things.
But even above that, right? Like, he has the means to survive something crazy. So why wouldn't you profiteer off it and lecture on it, right? So that's about the only thing in this entire thing that I'm like, okay, I believe that part.
Yeah, I hadn't thought about it that way at all. You know, I just,
I've had a lot of time.
Did this movie imply something? It actually implied something to you. Good job.
Sure. Thank you.
I just added a half star to my review.
Okay.
No, I didn't.
You should take it away, because I didn't know that the World Health Organization carries machine guns. I didn't know that that was a thing.
Well, there's multiple agencies at play here, and I don't even know
that all say that they're the World Health Organization.
You know what? One is a secret group that lives on a giant boat in the Adriatic Sea,
like a really terrible boat, too.
Yeah, it's like this rusted out hunk of junk. And the
they're like steampunk pirates that like help. I don't know, like.
Well, they're not. It's just a bunch of nerds on computers, you know, looking at computers.
I know, but they all have like Italian suits on, but they're in this crazy rusted out boat.
That's what they do.
Yes. I think, you know, I said early on to my friend who was sitting next to me that this reminds me of like a fat Jason Bourne, because Tom Hanks has to run all the time and he's not in running shape.
And he can't remember anything.
He can't remember anything. He's not in running shape in this movie. And then there's scenes like that on this boat where it looks just like the Langley scenes from Bourne, where they could chase him anywhere on the planet in real time in 4 seconds with one data point.
Well, okay.
He ate Tic Tacs.
You're not to reference Tic Tacs or Skittles ever again.
Sorry.
Not in this political environment.
Sorry.
So I want to touch upon the Felicity Jones character just a little bit, because it's such a coincidence that the woman who is a fan happens to be treating the guy, you know.
Sure.
And so when they're on the run, you know, when Tom Hanks can look at and go, oh my gosh, there's an A on the painting, and there's an R over here. It's an anagram for, you know, she is just almost as much of an expert as he is.
Right.
It was just an amazing coincidence. There is an explanation for it, though, and it is complete and utter horse crap. I mean, it is just the stupid. it's so stupid. You see it coming, like they're not going to do this, and then they actually do it.
Yes, they do. Yes,
and then they do some more. That's just like stuff that's just explained with dash with like. Okay, we need to connect this part of the movie to that part of the movie. We don't care if it makes sense. Just throw these three sentences into the script. Okay, this and that and this and then. Oh, that wow, that explains a lot of things, doesn't it? You know, there's just lots of, you know, very unconvincing pulling of rugs, baits and switches,
sure,
happening here. Where you think one thing's happening, but it's really not, and it's all
except you don't.
But
like
but,
you're just like you just want it to be over at one point.
Well, yeah, for sure. I mean, I don't know. Maybe I. The first two thirds of the movie, as stupid as this movie is, I was at least, you know, thinking, oh, this isn't awful, you know, and the final third just really. Launches all the torpedoes.
But I would say that the final third makes the first two thirds penalizes you for enjoying any minute of the first two thirds of the 2 hours that you have to suffer through this.
Yeah. And there's a big climactic sequence at the end, the action and the thing's gonna blow up and everybody's running and there's people and it's like Ron Howard is trying to be the kind of virtuoso filmmaker that he is not.
Well, the
final action sequence is just as confusing.
It's terrible. It doesn't what was driving me crazy is like you and I before we went in were comparing, you know, Dan Brown's fiction to like Tom Clancy's fiction and the mythological story told over and over at this point that like during Tom Clancy's first couple novels, he gets questioned by the government because how do you know all this stuff? And he has to point out all the freedom of information stuff before that was a word that we used, that he found all this stuff in a library and therefore wrote a book, right? Dan Brown is not that sort of writer. However, he tries to be that one. And so this last sequence is not only frenetic, it doesn't look like anybody asked anybody who is in that field of work how they would handle this situation because it literally seems like what you and I would do if this happened. Like,
well, and let's be careful here because I've read The Da Vinci Code, but I haven't read the other ones because I value my brain cells.
Sure.
So judging this purely as not necessarily a Dan Brown thing because I don't know how
I don't need okay regard the Dan Brown source material converted into the movie somewhere in that translation I don't believe anyone actually asked somebody what they would do in this situation in order to fulfill this scene.
Yeah, sure.
How about that? Is that fair?
Sure. It's implausible. It does not suspend your disbelief.
No,
for even a moment.
It seems
any
like
moment of this
it
movie,
seems yeah. like you had a preschool stage a crisis. Like what would 10 4-year-olds do if you told them bad things were going to happen?
But you know, my biggest issue is Ron Howard as a visual storyteller. It's like he you can sense he has some kind of ambition but he doesn't know what to do with it. You know, he wants and it actually made me think of you know, the recent James Bond pictures that had that kind of verve, that kind of visual pop to it. Not the last James Bond, but the one before
Skyfall.
Skyfall, where there is some really amazing visual stuff happening in these action sequences. You know, the up in the skyscraper in Singapore, and
sure,
the Komodo Dragon Pit and all that stuff. Really visually exciting backdrops for colorful backdrops for action sequences. And Howard sets this final action sequence below in this like underground former like what water.
It was like a water treatment plant, I guess.
Yeah, or
like
something
some
like
point.
That. Some ancient thing, and it's got all this crazy lighting, and an orchestra is playing, and there are a bunch of people down there. And we have no frame of reference for what this is, what is going on down there. They're just running through this, and people, and agents, and guns, and biohazard this, and whatever. And it's such a it's a jumbled visual mess after a while. And when things start blowing up, you don't know up from down and left from right. And it's laughably bad. It's really...
It's just, very bad.
Just a terrible chunk.
And I will say, I mean, I know we're almost into November, so I feel safe saying this. Like, I feel this might be the worst thing I've seen this year.
Yeah, as far as something in that lane... because I've seen some horrible, horrible comedies, Mother's Day and Dante. Or
Oh, yeah, I didn't see Mother's Day.
In Uncle Grandpa or whatever that Robert De Niro thing was.
Dirty Grandpa.
Dirty Grandpa. Dirty Uncle. Filthy Uncle.
Right.
which, you know, I don't know. Rotten apples to rotten oranges. If Inferno is your favorite movie, God help you. And I hate your favorite movie. Thanks for listening, everybody.
I'm sure you enjoyed every minute of this.